One does not just wake up one morning and say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to direct Richard III. Does one or does one?
Sort of.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 502, Directing Richard III. Jessica Thebus directed the amazing Gift Theater production of Richard III earlier this year, starring the charming and powerful Michael Patrick Thornton in the title role. It was such a great production, and Jessica's one of my favorite directors, so I was very excited to be able to pick her brain and ask her about what goes into directing a production of this incredibly famous play from both a textual and casting perspectives.
I have seen many productions of Richard III over many years, as so many people have. And when you see lots of productions of a play, you end up, you know, with your own thoughts about it and your own opinions about it. And I've been fascinated by pieces of Richard III for a long time. One piece, which we did not address so directly in this production, was the power of the women in it, who have this communal power, and the men are all throwing each other under the bus, whereas the women are figuring out how to connect with each other. And that's present in this production, but was not its sharpest point. And the other is Richard's relationship with the audience, which I'm a fanatic about direct address and teach classes in direct address, because I feel like if a director cannot figure out how to make their direct address in a play when it comes up, which is often as powerful, if not more powerful, as everything else in the play, then they don't know what they're doing directorially with that piece. So I saw Mike Thornton do a piece called The Good Thief, which was a one-person show some years ago, and his relationship with the audience in it reminded me of what I felt Richard III could be, in that he was, the character was appalling. It was a horrifying story he tells, and yet you're on his side the entire time because of his relationship with you. And so when someone said to me, you know, in a cafe conversation about season programming, and someone said, so what could you do if you could do anything? And it was actually kind of impulsive. I was like, anything? Well, what do you mean? And you can't do anything. And they were like, no, what if you were just going to do anything, what would you do? And I was like, well, what I'd ask Mike Thornton if he wanted to do Richard III, if I could do anything. And it just kind of came off the top of my head. And she was like, well, let's look into it. And that was Jennifer Avery at Next, before the sad demise of Next Theater. But that did start the conversation between Mike and I.
Well, and I want to talk about, you know, Mike in the role of Richard, but sticking with your issue of direct address, what was I expected to enjoy the performance, because Mike Thornton, an amazingly gifted actor who is confined to a wheelchair, and I say confined in air quotes, to play Richard. But the play started out, and you broke up. He starts with, now is the winter of our discontent. But you broke up the now, and you turned this, took this issue of direct address, and turned Richard into an even more unreliable narrator of his, of the entire play, which I thought was fascinating. And did that come before Mike?
No, that came after.
Okay.
Mike came first, and then I talked with him about the character, about what he, you know, what was in there, what was he doing, and then the, you know, the flashbacks. We called it the wrinkle in time, which is where the whole play is basically set the moment before the ghosts arrive, and he's going back through the story in his mind. And it was a later idea, and to be honest, I don't even really remember. I was spending time with the play, and I was, I think I was feeling, again, from all the different productions, I've always had this experience of, I love the beginning, you know, and then, you know, unless your Hastings is on fire, you know, then I'm like, when are those ghosts coming in?
Right.
Like, I want, you know, I want to stick with, again, this is coming out of the relationship with the audience. I want to stick with him, and then I want to see what pans, he made his bed, and I want to see what pans out, you know. And then when you see Clarence, you see everybody from the very beginning kind of coming back in this ghost scene. But then the Mount of Richmond there is at the end, I feel like is problematic.
Right.
So I started taking the scissors to it, mm-hmm. and I was like, well, good heavens, if I'm going to cut this much Richmond. And then it just kind of was full blown in my mind. I was like, why can't, I mean, he's basically saying to us,
yeah.
here's what happened.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, why can't it be here's what happened instead of like, here's what's going to happen.
Right.
And then it just seemed to make so much sense.
Well, and why can't we see what happened
why
as well?
Why can't we see what happened?
You so know, it,
why,
yes.
Why can't he show us because he's like, look, no, I did this, I did this, I did this, I'm checking the math, I'm gonna win tomorrow, despite all the evidence to the contrary. But he's been in that situation the whole time.
Right. He's always won.
He's always won, and he's always been a long shot.
Yeah. Well, and just from an audience point of view, I mean, I've read the play. I understand intellectually the history of Richard III and the kings before him, but to see those little moments from the Henry VI plays just helps me yeah. understand the story
I
that
know.
Much more.
Who's Margaret?
Who's Margaret?
Why is
exactly.
she so mad?
Yes.
I mean, you know, just I was just kind of going into it and it's like, all right, once we get past now is the winter of our discontent, like, where are we? What's
yeah.
up?
And, well, and you went now, and then everybody stopped, and you went back. You went into the past,
yeah.
which was just immediately,
yeah.
that made everybody in the room go, huh?
Yeah.
And lean
yeah,
forward.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I loved
amazing.
It. I loved it. And then once you get to Now is the Winter, which is about
yes.
12 minutes later,
yeah.
you're like, I loved how the room was dead silent.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Because then he's like, also, it was kind of a fun way to take all the pressure off Mike. Like, once he got to Now is the Winter,
yeah.
there was so much on the table
yeah.
that he was like, okay, here's what I'm talking about.
Right.
You know, rather than like, we're starting this... How
well,
are we going to begin this most famous speech?
And again, it's you come to see Richard III to see Richard.
Right.
And yet you started with your Richard, who then introduced everybody in this amazing ensemble. So it was clearly not just about Richard. It was about everybody in the room.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally. And we had a great cast, you know, that
yeah,
was
yeah.
a lot of Gift Company members. And then also, you know, members from half of the cast was from our initial cast at Next, which
okay.
we, you know, we had to abort the mission
yeah.
2 weeks before starting rehearsal. And so then we made offers to the entire original cast, and some could take them and some couldn't by that point. And then we had the Gift. And so it was kind of this great, blessed process where the people who,
yeah.
everyone kind of got on the boat.
Yeah.
And we had this fantastic ensemble, and they were playing, you know, they were doubled and tripled, and they were all really the ghosts, you know, everyone in gray.
Yeah.
And then everyone kind of, one of my favorite things, lurking on the periphery mm-hmm. so that... As he's like, no, then this happened, then I said, then she said, and then having his relationship with us, you've got everybody watching, and you just feel like the net is closing in
yeah.
around him slowly.
Well, it's interesting, too. As you said, they were all in gray, and they were all sort of closely shorn haircuts. Mm-hmm. I remember I saw you at that performance, and you said, God, you got a lot of hair. And then I saw your actors, and you went, well, no wonder you think I've got a lot of hair. But, like, the women were very distinct. There was a blonde, a brunette, an African-American
yeah.
woman. I mean, they were
yeah.
all very distinct. And the men were all a little anonymous. Was that on purpose?
Well, they all look like him. The men all look like him.
Oh,
so
right.
they're all him. You know,
they're all him.
They're all him.
Aspects
yeah.
of him.
And in a way, the women are, too. They're all wearing the same color and the fur, and, you know, but it's not going to... He had the beard and the shaved head
yeah.
and the earrings, and so
yeah.
they're... It's basically like he's just seeing himself.
That's so... Well, that's so cool, and...
We're in his skull. We're in his conscience.
Right. Well, and my point was, is that they're all... They all look very similar, and yet... I was always able to track who was who,
mm-hmm.
and which I think is a huge credit to your storytelling.
Well, it's such a big deal, because
yeah.
you're really in the middle of that, act two, you're like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
But we also did, I mean, it was pretty severely cut in order to kind of get this idea tight. So.
Oh, yeah, how much did you cut the play? It certainly didn't feel massive or unwieldy.
Mm. Technically, it's... not quite a third. It's probably a quarter, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because we took out almost all of the Richmond scenes at the end.
Yeah.
You know, once we got to
yes.
it was like Coward Conscience, and then it was like tumbling into the end. So
right.
there
and
were,
nobody cares. Yes.
Yeah, there were huge sections we cut out.
Yes.
Yeah, and I mean, I think nobody cares in this case because this production was after a specific thing, which
yeah.
was Richard's experience of conscience, which is what makes him not, to my mind, an absolute monster. You know, he has this speech, which is extremely difficult. after having done that whole play, where Coward Conscience, which is a tough speech anyway, and I was just fascinated by, like, the moment of most drama to me in that play mm-hmm. is not, you know, stabbing this person, whatever, is when he's like, wait a second. And so I wanted the whole thing to be in the mind of someone who had done all that and was just like, oh, shit. To me, that's dramatic.
I'm Peter Holland. I'm the McNeil Family Professor in Shakespeare Studies at the University of Notre Dame, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Oh, I'm very, very excited about this. Next week, we begin performing William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged at the Pleasance Courtyard at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. We'll be there from August 3rd to the 29th, and then we return to the U.S. this fall to perform the special election edition of The Complete History of America Abridged in more than 17 states, including Missouri, Iowa, Montana, Indiana, Minnesota, Utah, Michigan, Kentucky, Alaska, Washington, New Jersey, Ohio, Virginia, South Carolina, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Florida. All of those dates are up on our website now. We'll also be touring for 3 weeks in China, and in 2017, we'll begin a UK tour of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged. We'll have more information about those overseas tours later this fall. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Jessica Thebus, the director of the amazing Gift Theater production of Richard III.
So now let's talk about your Richard. Talk about Michael Patrick Thornton as Richard.
Well, what's fascinating about Mike as Richard is, you know, he is dealing with this disability. And so that comes into play right away when you're talking about Richard III. The thing that's interesting, though, to me is that Mike would be a great Richard regardless. Yes. And so, you know, someone asked me in some interview around it, like, doesn't this just make the whole production about disability? And I was like, well, obviously it's in there, but, you know, it doesn't mean nothing if you play Richard III.
Did that guy see the production? Because yeah. He was pretty able.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Mike and I had a lot of great conversation about, like, all right, what turns a person into someone who's able to do this? And the thing with me, which had to do with led me to the whole conscience thing, is that you've got someone with incredible gifts. He is, you know, savvy. He's intuitive. He's brilliant. He's clearly in war. He's a mastermind general for Edward's army.
So you're talking about Richard. I thought you were talking about Mike.
Both. And
they're both funny.
They're both really funny. Yeah. And in terms of Richard, and then he's furious with God because he feels he's been cheated of the ability to enjoy these gifts. So he feels like he's being mocked by God because God's like, you have all these gifts. Oh, but, you know, you're not like everyone else. And you have, you know, your body is broken, quote unquote, in this way. And you can't, you know, live a normal life. And then he just goes out to just prove everything wrong. And so Mike brought initially a lot of excitement about this quarrel with God. And then he said to me, you don't often see a piece that is about, in some sense, disability and living with disability that's enraged, that's angry. And one of the things he brought to it also during the process is he'd read, and I wish I had it in front of me, but I don't, but it's like the 12 myths about disabled people. And he said, I want this production to blow each of these myths out of the water. One, you know, they're mentally slow. Like, people will speak loudly to someone in a wheelchair.
Oh my God.
Why? You know, that they're not sexually active, that they're somehow holy or, you know, more holy than the rest of us. Or these, like, myths that are... Right. You know, that people carry without even realizing it. And so that's not Richard III, you know, to let him be like, he's enraged, he's sexual, he's, you know, monstrous, and he's furious, and let all that happen.
Yeah.
It just is like, Richard is no mystery. I mean, the thing about going into Richard being like, what's his problem? It's sort of like, I feel like, what's unclear about what's his problem?
Yeah.
And that was a real conversation between Mike and I.
Right. Well, and yes, you watch Mike as Richard
And you are immediately drawn to this man who's not acting that he's in a wheelchair. He's in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
So you're watching not only the character, but the actor. You had a coup de théâtre at the end of Act One where he walks. How did that come about?
Well, that was fascinating. I mean, that's the Rehabilitation Institute of Chicago, and that is where Mike recovered from his strokes, and he's a board member there now. And Mike just brought that to me. He was in conversation with them, and he said, what if we use this? And it's the cutting-edge technology. It's called the EXO, and it's ReWalk, I think, is the company. I'm not going to get it all right. But anyway, it's these robotic legs, leg braces, really runs like a robot, run by a computer, that enable people with partial paralysis to walk. I can't speak of it technically exactly accurately, but and it's fascinating. And he was determined that he would learn to do, which is a real athletic thing. I mean, you really have to learn it, and your body has to learn it, and then it learns your body. And you know, it made me just realize what an athlete Mike is.
Oh, Jesus. Forget about how do you learn those lines.
Yeah.
Oh, how do you learn to walk again? By the way.
Yeah. I mean, it's really but it was actually just great because the you know, we called it the robot. The dialogue with the robot was really a part of us cooking up this production too, because they're all kinds of like, how does it make him feel to do it? And he said, you know, it's very he said it's almost like you're being used, like it's walking without you, you're not in control of it as much. I mean, it's like there's sort of a lot of emotional things about it. There's also just the question of when you use it in the play. When you are gonna, like, we couldn't use it the whole time, right? It's just like, it's too tiring, and two, it's just not as dramatic as it could be.
No, yeah.
And also, I mean, this is the irony of it, right? Mike in the wheelchair is far more free than in the legs. Now, technology will advance, but it's kind of an interesting thing. Like, him looking normal, and then Mike talked a lot about Franklin Roosevelt and in the Senate chamber, feeling like he had to be upright and had to lean on a senator's arm.
Yeah.
And like what it means to look like everyone else as opposed to being okay, you know, like the freedom he actually has and the agility he has in the wheelchair. He can pretty much move as fast as anybody.
Yeah.
But then the walking is this incredible thing where we decided to use it as an extension of the crown.
Yeah.
That he has the thing that he thinks is going to solve everything, that's going to make him feel like he's made it and he's like everyone, and he gets the crown and the legs and he can walk, and then it's all exactly the same. And this famously is the turn in Richard III where he's like, you know, Buckingham, his partner in crime, basically says to him, we did it, you know, and he's like, yeah, let's keep going.
Yeah.
You know, now I'm going to kill the children because I just can't, he just can't put it down.
Yeah.
And it's always the question of like, why can't Richard put it down? And I loved how using the robot in that moment was like, he was like, I'm like, we're all the same. And then everyone's just kind of staring at him. He's like, oh my God, it had nothing to do with it.
Right.
Like the crown, the standing up, the walking, like none of it gets me love.
Yeah.
None of it gets me the love that I feel I've been denied. Another joke from God. And then he's like, I'll kill the children. And he goes off the rails in Act Two. So Act One, our Act One, is all about him winning against all odds. And Act Two is about it slipping through his fingers right up until that oh shit moment.
Yeah.
And I just loved that sculpture of it. It's fascinating.
Well, and it was moving. The end of Act One was moving, and was I were my eyes welling up because I was watching Mike Thornton walk, or was I was moved by Richard III getting his crown and walking? But it was moving because we're seeing something. No acting was going on. That was shit that was really happening. And you talk about he's more free in the wheelchair. The battle at Bosworth Field was intense and real. And it was people fighting against a guy in a wheelchair and some of them getting killed by the guy in the wheelchair. I mean, it was really well staged. How long did that take?
John Tovar was our fantastic fight choreographer. Kind of a while. It was a big piece.
Yeah.
We started with it. I mean, it was like in week one, we got that on its feet. And we were like, okay, the gray staffs. And I knew that the camera, quote unquote, was going to have to be pretty close. It's like what we, you know, it's not a realistic battle sequence. We're not in a movie, you know, but we're in his experience.
And theatrically, it was quite intense.
Yeah, it was very close to the audience.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people, 17 15 people in the show. Almost everyone is fighting. It's really tight choreography, and Richard has to be dangerous. Yeah. And so we had to sculpt it around, you know, so that you're really, it felt like you're in his experience. You hear the breath, you hear the heartbeat. And, you know, he says, there's six Richmonds in the field, and I've killed five. Yeah. And so that when, and then the thing where, you know, Mike and I both, I think concurrently, were like, I think you have to be out of the chair at the end. You know, what is the horse? Horse, a horse. And it's the, you know, your ability to move. And so, you know,
the horse is the chair.
The horse is the chair. And that Mike being willing to be out of the chair, which actually we figured out how to do safely fairly quickly, with a great ensemble of people who are, you know,
absolutely. Whatever. I knew he was going to fall out of the chair, and I went, how are they going to? Oh, of course. They did it with actors doing it really gently.
Really carefully. So it was pretty safe and still powerful. And then this moment where, I mean, you can't have Richmond come kill a defenseless person on the ground, but we worked it with John so that, you know, Richard is really, you know, like, white flag. Okay, I mean, like, I'm clearly done, obviously. Yeah. And that Richmond, very young actor, wonderful, Greg Fenner, you know, comes up to him and is basically like, okay, great, I'm going to take you prisoner now, and calls for help. And that Richard takes his sword and pulls him down so that his, like, he's lethal. Yeah. Even when he's on the ground, and he has the physical strength in his arms, and he has the psychological strength that he's going to cut his head off with his own sword. You know, right. He's going to cut off Richmond's head, and right. That it's the ghosts coming in, where then Richard looks around and they're all around again, the conscience that just makes in that moment, like, he lets go and Richmond just defends himself. And that's how, you know, Richard dies on Bosworth Field.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. The Gift Theater production of Richard III has closed, but I sure hope it gets another run somewhere. I wish you all could see it. And hopefully when I get back from Edinburgh, I can have a conversation with Michael Patrick Thornton about what it's like acting Richard III. Send us your dramatic interpretations via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, unreliable narrator Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Tim McKinnon. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Professor Peter Holland from the University of Notre Dame. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 502-1506 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
It's going to be tough watching another Richard III, I have to say. It was pretty definitive.
For me, too. I mean, I just feel like, and for Mike, too. Mike was, he said, you know, he's like, I've always loved Anthony Scher's book, Year of the King, which I always have, too. And, of course, there are great things in there. But he was like, but I don't know. I went back to it, and I was like, why are these able-bodied actors pretending to be? I mean, there's just something about it. Like, once it, I feel like it's, well, I don't know that I could do another Richard.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.